cameras.
In the name of Allah, hello and welcome to Forum, Saar Television's weekly roundtable. In tonight's programme, we shall be discussing Christian Zionism. We'll try to address the question of where the term Christian Zionism comes from and how powerful it is. And to help me to address these questions, we're joined in our Tehran studios by two distinguished guests. I'm joined on my right by Reverend Dr. Stephen Sizer. Dr. Sizer, welcome to Forum.
Thank you.
Dr. Sizer is Vicar of Christ Church, Virginia Waters, Surrey, in Britain. And on my left, I'm joined by Masoud Shajara, Chairman of the Islamic Human Rights Commission. A very warm welcome to you as well, Mr.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Before I put the first questions to our studio guests, we've prepared a short report for you. Stay tuned. The term Zionism was first coined in the late 19th century and referred to the movement for the return of the Jewish people to an assured and secure homeland in Palestine. Ironically, this vision was largely nurtured and shaped by Christians long before it received widespread Jewish support. The origins of Christian Zionism lie within 19th century British premillennial sectarianism, but by the early 20th century it had become a predominantly American dispensational movement and a pervasive within all main evangelical denomination. The contemporary Christian Zionism movement emerged after the Six-Day War in Israel in 1967, and it has had a significant influence on attitudes towards the ongoing Palestinian-Israel conflict in the Middle East. No religious persuasion has ever been more clearly responsible for so much bloodshed and destruction as has Christian Zionism. This 100-year-old offshoot of fundamental Christianity has almost single-handedly legitimized wars in Arab states since January 1991. Its power at the polls is only being understood now. Welcome back. Reverend Dr. Stephen Sizer, you're an author of the book Panorama and the Bible Lands and the Footsteps of Jesus and the Apostles. Please tell us, what is Christian Zionism? Who are these Christian Zionists?
Christian Zionism is a very broad movement that brings together different interest groups within the Christian community who believe that it is their responsibility to support the state of Israel for theological or biblical reasons. It stemmed from the 19th century in Britain when a group of eccentric Christian leaders believed that the end of the world was about to happen as a result of the Napoleonic Wars and civil strife in Britain and Europe. And they, looking at their Bibles, believed there were certain events that had to take place before Jesus returned.
Right.
The Jews needed to be in the land, the temple needed to be rebuilt so that it could be desecrated by the Antichrist, and then Jesus would return.
Right.
And so, cynically, I think, they felt, well, let's help the process. And so they began to persuade Jewish people to return to the land. And when people like Theodor Herzl began to speculate about a Jewish state, it was the Christian community that assisted him and his colleagues to get a hearing among the governments of Europe. And it became a reality because it coincided with British strategic interest in the Middle Right. East. Britain wanted to control Palestine, to keep out the Germans and the Russians and maintain our trade routes to India and Africa. And so a compliant Jewish presence, not a state, but a presence within the British Empire, was seen as expedient.
Right. Fine.
You said that this helping the process by these groups that would even go as far as killing innocent people, suppressing Palestinians, etc. So were there any limits to what they would stop at?
If we had a Christian Zionist present, he would question those statements. they would like to think that they are doing God's will, that the Jews remain God's chosen people, and therefore they have a right to Palestine.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore the best thing the Palestinians can do is leave.
Leave. Go elsewhere.
And therefore they argue that Jews are above the law, that they are no longer required to keep international law. And therefore they turn a blind eye to the suffering of the Palestinians, or justify Israeli aggression on the grounds that the Israelis are being defensive against the aggression of the Palestinians.
Great, thank you. Masoud Shajere, simple question. Why are these people so powerful?
Why are they so powerful? I think you need to sort of understand that there has been a revival of religion in the West, and Islam, Christianity, and the more sort of, not the liberal sort of lines of these religions, but actually more fundamental lines of these religions are actually very popular. And so we are seeing sort of more fundamentalist sort of views from Muslim Christians and indeed the Jewish community. But this, what is happening, that this has been actually abused by the Zionists. And I think also it's very important to understand that when we say Christian Zionists, it actually confirms what most of us who are standing against Zionism. Zionism and Judaism are not equated.
Right.
There could be a Christian Zionist, and indeed there could be a Muslim Zionist, you know, people who supported the Zionist entity for political or other reasons.
For their interests.
For their interests. So, you know, the two are completely dissociating from one another. I mean, we have had Tony Blair, for example, as a prime minister, who's been one of the most Zionist of our prime ministers, and he's never committed to Christian. So that is one aspect. But I think the other aspect is because people want to find a sort of a spiritual guidance in leading their lives, then so religion is becoming more powerful. In the United States, the religious lobby is very powerful, and it's been manipulated by the Zionist movement. You know, when the Zionist leaders go into United States, they don't go to see the Jewish lobby. They don't go to see the Jewish community. They go to see the Zionist, Christian Zionist. You know, if you look at the voting pattern in the United States, the Jewish community in the United States and the Muslim community in the United States both actually have got the exact same voting pattern. They never voted for Bush. They always vote Democrat. But who is actually voting for these extreme? It's actually Christian Zionists. And their power is also equated with the other very powerful lobbies, like the arms lobby. Actually, they have conversion of interest. So you see a conversion of interest between the Zionist Jews, the Christian Zionists, and the arms industry, then becomes extremely powerful. And as Reverend said, like in the creation of Israel, there is also a political sort of angle which fits in to this thing, be it Iraq or be it the issue of axis of evils and so forth. It actually helps to justify the political sort of needs and the aspiration of United States and you know, governments like Blair's government to sort of give more importance to these groups.
Fine. Reverend, I'd like your views as to why these groups are, this particular group is so powerful, and the agenda being pursued by the Christian Zionists.
The movement today is predominantly an American one.
Mm-hmm.
It's heavily influenced by quite well-known Christian leaders. Jerry Falwell died recently, but for 50 years he was leading the Christian Zionist movement. Alongside him, John Hagee is a pastor of a church in San Antonio. He has 18,000 members in his church. He founded CUFI, Christians United for Israel. There are other organizations, Bridges for Peace, International Christian Embassy. Together, they form a federation of pro-Zionist, pro-Israeli organizations that lobby churches and have persuaded Christians that it is their mandate or responsibility from God to help the Jewish people. Alongside that is the incentive that the belief that God is blessing America because America is looking after Israel. And therefore, there is a vested interest in maintaining their standard of living and their access to the oil in the Middle East, for example, mm-hmm. by supporting Israel and weakening the surrounding nations, either with the carrot or the stick. The carrot, Turkey, Egypt. And maybe Jordan. The stick used against Lebanon, Syria, and Iran.
And Hamas and other...
But there is actually one thing which many Jewish intellectuals are recognizing and highlighting, that this sort of love of the Christian Zionists for the Jews and Israelis is actually goes until the sort of just the last act. You know, they aren't really don't have any love for the Jews. They actually would want to either convert them or remove them.
Right.
And so really. It is actually a very deceiving sort of support. It's not a total support for the Jewish community to live happily ever after in Israel. They actually want them to build the temple so it will be a means of return of the Christ and removal of all the Jews from the area. So I think many Jews are now awakening to that. They're saying that, look, the fact that the Zionists are supporting them is also shows that they really don't have the interests of the Jews at heart, because this sort of support is going to be counterproductive in the long term. So there are all these other angles, which is actually very important to recognize. You know, the rest of us want to create a society everywhere, including in occupied Palestine, that is harmonious. And you know, we really believe, and we had a conference that the Reverend was there. We were talking about, you know, we really, the solution to the Palestine needs to be a Christian, Jewish, Muslim. Solution. And it's something that we need to all come together to recognize that, you know, this sort of Zionist apartheid ideology needs to be removed and create a better and juster society, which is a more Christian thing, which is a more Islamic thing, and is a more of a humanitarian thing.
Right. Reverend, earlier you alluded to the fact that they're prepared to turn a blind eye to the suffering inflicted upon the Palestinians in occupied lands. But this is not what was preached by the Holy Prophet of Christianity, Jesus Christ.
Of course.
So how can you refer to them as Christians if they're practicing something that Jesus Christ did not preach? He said, love your brother, even love your enemy. So how does that fit?
That's a very profound question. We're dealing with a very broad cross-section of Christians, some of whom have clearly departed from the teachings of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And I hold the leadership responsible for that. And the heads of the churches here in the Middle East, in Jerusalem and in Iran, I met some of them yesterday, the bishop, the Armenian bishop and the Assyrian bishop. They repudiate Christian Zionism as a heresy. It does not deserve the title Christian, but that is how they describe themselves. My burden is for the people caught in the middle who follow these false teachers, who don't know the Bible well enough
mm-hmm.
to recognize the errors of what they are being taught.
To distinguish the
they are
the
sincere,
right and
but yes, they are sincere but misguided. And so our a burden, my colleagues and I, our writings and our preaching is designed to help the Christian community go back to the Bible and recognize what Jesus taught us about how we should treat other people with love and respect and compassion.
Reverend, what are these people using, what are they relying on as their theology?
It's a theology that's quite simple, really. It's based on the belief that promises God made to the Jewish people
mm-hmm.
in Genesis and in other parts of the Hebrew Scriptures apply unconditionally forever to the physical descendants of Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph. And they have to conveniently ignore the teachings of the prophets and the teachings of Jesus. In mathematics, a child will learn that if you have an even number and you add an odd number, you end up with an odd number. If you have an unconditional promise and then you add a conditional clause, it becomes a conditional promise. So if God promised Abraham and his descendants the land, unconditional. But then in the law of Moses and the prophets, very clear instructions. You must obey the law or you will be thrown out of the land. And the Jewish people were kicked out of the land at least twice, under the Assyrians, under the Babylonians, under the Greeks, under the Romans.
Right.
So they should have learnt their lesson, but they hang on to the unconditional promise and ignore the conditional responsibility they have to remain faithful to God.
Actually, it's interesting. If we had the Orthodox rabbis here, they would highlight that, you know, according to proper teaching of Judaism, once you actually were thrown out of the land and the temple destruction, then they are living in exile. And there is evidence to that, that then you shall live on exile until coming, you know, of Christ.
Of Jesus Christ.
So, you know, which is very interesting because, you know, really in some aspect, Muslims, Christians and the Jews are waiting for either the first coming or the second coming. Mm. And you know, we all, those of us who actually following the real basis, we recognize that, you know, until then, we actually have to make the best of it.
Yes.
On the teachings, which is proper. And what Zionism done, both within the Judaism and Christianity and the secular movement, is actually like a cancer. It's actually destroyed the whole humanity and destroyed the religions, destroyed the principles based on one or two sort of verses and the politics of fear, which now we see very prominent, you know, in the world. It actually started from there, you know, that if you don't do this, then you shall be killed, you shall be, genocide will take, Holocaust will take against you. And
right.
Therefore, you have got a sort of justification to do all the wrongs. And actually, I think that, you know, we as human beings, whatever our background, secular or religion, we need to actually make a commitment to stand and fight this Zionism, this cancerous sort of ideology, which is corrupting everything.
Master Chajara, do we know how big this Judeo-Christianity or Christian Zionist community is?
It's quite large. I mean, in the terms of you know, votes, we know that they are in power of bringing sort of to support one political party against another. And I said, you know, there is the conversion of interest between them and the the arms lobby, which is again very powerful, and the Zionist lobby, which got a lot of resources. And when you talk about conversion of these three, then they really are in a position to actually move and remove everyone, including the president. And that is very powerful. And it needs to be exposed. I mean, the wonderful work that Reverend does is actually exposing and you know, educating the masses. And this is how we need to deal with it.
Reverend, how difficult is it to actually succeed in the path you've launched to educate the masses, to distinguish between the right path and this path that it's a bit murky? It's not, it uses the name Christian, but it's not following the path of Jesus Christ. How, what obstacles have you faced in Britain?
You have to be willing to be faithful to God and suffer the consequences.
Right.
When you've seen the truth in Palestine, when you've seen the suffering, and when you appreciate firsthand how the church in Palestine is dying because of the uncritical Christian Zionist support for Israel, it gives you a motivation
right.
to persevere. The opposition is the carrot and the stick, as I said earlier. The Zionist lobby is very generous in endowments toward universities and academic institutions, to the point where we become dependent on that money. Then when someone is invited to speak in the university that's on a blacklist, a Zionist blacklist, okay. they will threaten to withdraw the money unless you disinvite. That's happened to me regularly.
Right.
If they cannot buy you, then they will try and undermine you. I have a PhD from Middlesex University.
Right.
They used Jeffrey Alderman, who is a controversial academic, Jewish academic, to challenge my examiners, challenge the university for giving me my PhD
right.
because he disagreed with it. they will accuse you of anti-Semitism. The Union of Jewish Students presented a paper to Parliament, the British Parliament, accusing individuals of being anti-Semitic. And as soon as it was submitted to the Parliament, it became protected by parliamentary privilege.
Right.
So it's possible to be libelous in a statement to Parliament, and if you have been libeled, you have no recourse. So when we challenged them as to why my name appeared, they said I had participated in a forum such as this where another speaker had justified suicide bombings. And because I was on the same platform, that was guilt by association.
Right.
So they use various means to intimidate you, seek to get you sacked from your job, accuse you of being anti-Semitic, to get disinvited from speaking opportunities. They try and silence you, or they will try and buy you.
So what about this concept of freedom of speech? Where does that come into it?
Well, our freedom of speech in Britain is increasingly curtailed by other laws that in some senses are good, that protect people from racial hatred, protect people's religious values from being denigrated, and
right.
I accept that. But in this case, it is used as a means of intimidating the free expression of factual information. I'll just give you one other example. An organization was founded recently called Anglicans for Israel. It's extreme right wing, linked to white South Africa, the Masons. I exposed aspects of the criminal record of one of their staff, and it's factually accurate, based on internet access, internet documentation, but I was sued on libel grounds. And being a minister, I don't have access to funds to contest the allegation. I employed a Jewish lawyer, human rights lawyer, Daniel Machover, and he said, listen, you have to settle because you cannot afford to go through the courts because they will just play you until you're bankrupt.
Exactly.
So it was expensive just to buy them off.
It does bear a question here that we really need to organize those of us who are standing for justice, not so much for protective of ourselves. I agree with you. We make a choice and we pay the price. But we need to be organized to actually withstand. There's such an organized way that we are being attacked on all the time.
Right. On that note, we're going to take a short break. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Forum. Masoud Shajara, would you give us, tell us about the influence of Israel in U.S. foreign policy?
Well, it really is so clearly there. I mean, we know everything that has happened in the last few years, including Iraq and so forth, could not have been, it has had no benefit to anyone. Except the state of Israel. I mean, the reality is that it hasn't benefited the United States. It did not benefit even Bush. It did not even benefit Blair himself or Britain or indeed the humanity. You know, we've seen the destruction in Iraq. Who has benefited out of all that? The only beneficiaries are Israelis, you know, and not Israelis. I should correct myself. Israelis are not benefiting, but the Zionist movement within Israel, which actually wants to keep and hold on to power no matter what, is the beneficiary.
And push for wars, even more wars.
I really honestly do believe that overwhelming majority of the Israelis, be it they know it or not, they have become imprisoned by this whole power, and an Israeli evil force. And when you look at sort of where did the new cons come from? Where did the ideology of new con came? They all came out of think tanks within the state of Israel. I mean, it is very clear. You could just trace it, and you see that's where it started. And actually, I think this is actually what makes the whole thing so urgent, that we need to recognize that if we want to have peace in this world, we need to resolve the issue of Palestine-Israeli conflict. If we want to resolve Palestine-Israeli conflict, we need to remove Zionism from this earth, really, as an ideology. In the same way that apartheid was removed, which gave opportunity to black and whites to start beginning and putting their lives together, we need to give the same break in Middle East to people to actually go back to the old ways. You know, Jews, Muslims, and Christians lived together. I mean, you know, Reverend could highlight hundreds and hundreds of cases that there have actually been genocide of the Christians by the Zionist Israelis in the Holy Land. And we need to actually highlight this and actually say enough is enough. We want to create a world which is not based on conflict for the interest of few, but we need to have a world that is actually live in peace with itself, with confidence, and so forth and so on. And so really, I think to ask the question how much is influenced, that is very clear. But I think we need to begin to start asking question, how can we actually unite the rest of the world to recognize the danger that we are facing, the real danger that we are facing.
Right. Reverend Sizer, how accurate would it be to say that this group of Christian Zionists have hijacked U.S. foreign policy and they're actually acting against the interest of the majority of the Americans?
I think that's clear from the consequences of 9/11. The tragedy of 9/11 is that most Americans haven't woken up to the fact that it was a direct response to their own foreign policy in the Middle East.
Right.
There was shock, naturally, but there was almost a sense of innocent outrage. How dare you do this to us? We are civilized. We are committed to democracy, and we love you. But ironically, it was an indication of the level of hatred and frustration there is in the world directed to America. The Christian Zionist lobby is quite sophisticated, and it is very involved with the Israeli right in helping to shape U.S. foreign policy, either through ensuring that the leadership around the president are either Jewish or Zionist Jews, or they are Zionist Christians. So, for example, John Hagee at the moment, I mentioned him earlier, he has been very vocal over the last year, insisting that, quote, America must join Israel in a preemptive strike against Iran to fulfill biblical prophecy and speed the return of the Messiah, trying to link the Bible with American foreign policy and their manifest destiny in order to bring peace to the Middle East. Three or four years ago, he would have been saying America must join Israel in a preemptive strike against Iraq to fulfill biblical prophecy. I have books that show pictures of Saddam Hussein with Nebuchadnezzar, saying they even look the same. Saddam Hussein was rebuilding Babylon. Babylon is mentioned in the Bible. This is the Bible coming true. Now that Saddam Hussein is no more, Iraq is effectively neutralized, we have a civil war. Now who's the next enemy? It must be Iran, because Iran is standing up for the rights of the Palestinians.
Right.
Also, I think we need to recognize that the Zionists who are creating these conflicts is because if there is no conflict, then there will be interest turning around and looking at what Israelis are doing, what the Zionists are doing in Israel, and how they're actually abusing people. Then there will be outcry that how could you do this? So they actually need to create such a havoc, which is on much bigger scale than what they are doing, so they could actually divert attention. So nobody is turning around and saying, look what you're doing in West Bank. You're committing genocide. What you're doing within building the wall. What are you doing here? What are you doing there? Because the whole attention has been turned into much bigger problems, much bigger sort of crisis. And they actually want to fuel those crises further and further to divert attention from all the evil that they are doing. And we need to actually sort of put all these things in the right perspective. And I really do believe that it is very important that all of us to actually question, to answer, to address this thing. I mean, the work that the Reverend is doing is a fantastic work, and we need to awaken the masses to this destructive sort of ideology. You know, I don't want to sort of repeat what Tony Blair was saying, that the problem is the sort of evil ideology. But there is an evil ideology here that has been deliberately created. And if anything, we should really highlight it as Antichrist, you know, sort of, because really this is what we've been promised, that someone is going to divert people in the name of religion and in the name of good, and it's going to cause havoc.
Yes.
And people will be fooled and follow. Yes. And this is a prophecy that we need to actually highlight, that look, wake up, don't fall for that.
But Masoud Shajara, this pursuit of the agenda is coming at a great cost for the American nation. Look at the economy, look at the state of the US economy, look at the astronomical cost of the war being waged in Afghanistan and Iraq, look at the price of oil. How can this be justified? Why is there not resistance from within the United States?
Well, this is, again, as I mentioned briefly, it's an issue of the politics of fear. You see, you could, if you put enough fear, I mean, this is how the whole state of Israel was created. It's the politics of fear. If you make people fear so much, I mean, this recently there was a survey done in the United States. 80% of Americans are actually fearful of being victims of terrorism. When this is ridiculous.
So fear works.
Fear works. You know, I mean, Gorin actually said in Nuremberg that, you know, how you could actually motivate, be it democracy, dictatorship, or kingship, how you promote and get people into war is you create fear, and you, you know, those who oppose it, you all call them unpatriotic, etc., etc. And this is exactly the policy which is being followed in the United States, and the policy which is being followed prior to that in Israel. I mean, look how they actually target safe-hating Jews, you know, and so forth and so on. It's exactly the same policy. You create fear, and people out of fear, they end up being willing to commit genocide and acts of evil.
Right, Reverend Dr. Stephen Sizer, last question to you, sir. What can we do? What needs to be done?
We need to work together with our Jewish friends and Muslim friends and show the wider world how we can live together in harmony and respect one another's differences and work for the common good. And one of the best ways we can do this is when, for example, when my Muslim friends are being criticized, or my Jewish friends, to speak up for them,
right,
and inform my own community of their value, their rights, and their aspirations. To break down the wall of fear and suspicion, and to major on what we have in common. I think this is very important, and certainly when I get back to Britain, I will be telling my own constituents in my own church and my friends about my experiences here in Iran and the lessons I have learnt about religious tolerance here in Iran.
Masoud Shajara, any hope? Any light at the end of the tunnel?
Yes, of course there is a light at the end of the tunnel. I mean, as someone who follows, has got a spiritual sort of image of the whole world, there is light. But the point is this, that are we going to be part of that? Are we going to be positive part of that? Or is that, are we going to be just sitting around watching to see what happens, or indeed at worst become the negative aspect of it? And I actually really do believe that, you know, as one of the speakers in recent conference said, that the real chosen people are those who are oppressed. It's not the fact that they are from a particular group. The chosen people by God is the oppressed people, and presently Palestinians actually are one of the best examples of that.
Well, on that note, we've come to the end of this edition of Forum. I'd like to thank Reverend Dr. Stephen Sizer, Vicar of Christchurch, Virginia Water, Surrey, in Britain. It was a pleasure to have you in our program. And also joining us, we had Masoud Shajara, Chairman of the Islamic Human Rights Commission.
Thank you
for joining us. Good night, and God bless.
Thank you very much. Thank you.